Over the weekend, Paramount Pictures released the new Top Gun movie. And if you don't know the original, it's from 1986, and Tom Cruise plays a cocky fighter pilot.
The original Top Gun is just the ultimate emblem of 1980s rah-rah cinema. Pro-America, peak empire, big movie stars, showing the world American might and sex appeal.
I feel the need for speed.
Our colleague Eric Schwartzel covers Hollywood.
I mean, it's the ultimate example of American soft power because it's not only about the skill and the heroism of the American military, but it's also about how America is a place of glamorous movie stars and really handsome guys and hot girls.
Let's go! Okay, I tap!
At some point, it doesn't even matter if you've seen it because there's so many elements that have become part of the cultural firmament that, like, you don't even really remember what the actual movie is. Instead, you sort of just absorb the brand of the movie.
Talk to me, Goose.
Roger, I got him. Contact 20 left at 30 miles, 900 knots closure.
In the movie, when Cruise isn't flying dangerous missions, he's riding his motorcycle in a bomber jacket with aviator shades.
It's fascinating to me that after that movie came out in 1986, Ray-Ban sales exploded because everybody wanted to look like Tom Cruise.
And Joe Biden is still wearing those Ray-Bans.
I know. He looks great in them.
And so now we have a new Top Gun movie, Top Gun Maverick.
Yes. I mean, so I think everybody is going to see this movie because they want to see the fighter jets dancing throughout the sky. And they want to see how exactly Tom Cruise looks like that at 59 years old. I was very interested in looking to see what happened to the flags.
What flags?
So in 2019, there was an early trailer for Top Gun Maverick that was released that showed Tom Cruise putting on his iconic bomber jacket. And on the back of the original jacket in 1986, there were these patches.
On one of the patches on Cruise's jacket were the flags of Japan and Taiwan. And the movie's producers were worried that those flags could jeopardize the film's release in China. So for the sequel, those flags got changed.
What had happened in those 30-some years was that China had grown from a market closed off to the world to Hollywood's most important foreign market. And in that time, every studio had absorbed lessons about what you had to do to maintain access to that market. You really can tell the whole story of Hollywood and China in the story of these two Top Guns.
Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Kate Linebaugh. It's Wednesday, June 1st. Coming up on the show, a tale of two Top Guns.
This episode is brought to you by UiPath. Human achievement can be slow. 200,000 years to go from the wheel to your jalopy? Really? But today, 90% of the Fortune 500 are accelerating human achievement simply. When AI is everywhere, every process can be automated and accelerated. 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 UiPath, the AI everywhere foundation of innovation.
Over the past 20 years, moviegoing in China has exploded. So much so that the country's box office now rivals that of the U.S.
China's box office started growing at a clip. You had this massive migration, millions of people in China moving from rural communities into the cities. And so these cities were being built, and what do they need? They need grocery stores and hospitals and movie theaters. So at one point, China was building 27 new movie screens a day. And this was at a time when the American film market was flatlining. So it didn't exactly take a business genius to see where the growth was.
But before all that, Hollywood movies weren't widely available in China until the 1990s, when they really started showing up. And the one that made American movie executives realize the potential of the Chinese market, you've probably heard of it, or at least its famous soundtrack.
When Titanic came out, it made about $50 million in China. And at the time, a $50 million gross was something that a lot of studio executives never expected to see out of China.
And it wasn't long before those studio executives realized the potential of this new audience and became more and more excited to bring new movies to Chinese theaters.
There was a big difference in this foreign market than in other foreign markets. And that was that every movie that is screened in Chinese theaters has to be approved by Chinese censors at the Ministry of Propaganda in Beijing.
The Communist Party's Department of Propaganda enforces censorship, deciding what the Chinese people can and cannot see. And Hollywood had to start guessing what would make it past the censors.
There were certain no-go zones that it had to avoid if it wanted to keep accessing that market.
And can you give me some examples of what those no-go zones are?
Oh, sure. So in the 90s, there was this very famous example of two movies that were released, 7 Years in Tibet and Kundun, that were both about a young Dalai Lama.
Your Holiness.
Yes?
The Chinese have invaded.
China considers the Dalai Lama to be an enemy. So when these two films were released, even though they never came out in China, Communist Party officials were not happy. And in response, they banned the two studios that made the movies, Sony and Disney. And for Disney especially, this was a big business problem.
Disney already then has major aspirations for toy sales, for ticket sales, and even for one day a theme park in China. So all of those future plans are jeopardized by the release of this film. And Disney business in China stops for about a year until the CEO at the time, Michael Eisner, flies over and meets with a high-ranking CCP official named Xu Rongji.
And in that conversation, Eisner apologized for even making the movie at all.
He says to Xu Rongji, he says, you know, the bad news is that we made the film. The good news is that hardly anybody saw it.
The ban on Disney was eventually rescinded. And in the years to come, Disney would go on to make concessions to the Chinese government, making sure its business would continue unimpeded.
Every studio in Hollywood absorbed that lesson very fast. Like, you don't make any movies about the Dalai Lama. And same goes for what they call the three T's, Tibet, Taiwan, and Tiananmen Square. Any script that is going to touch any of those topics is likely not going to be picked up by any major studio that wants to maintain business relations in Beijing.
These days, Hollywood executives are getting really good at predicting what the Chinese censors will have an issue with and what should be avoided in big-budget movies.
Chinese officials in the past have not allowed any movies in with ghosts in them, so let's avoid ghosts in this script. And time travel is another no-no, because time travel implies there's a history that is different from the one the state has endorsed. So time travel concepts might have to be massaged a little bit before a script is put into production. And so they start to change the movies that get made at all.
So no Beetlejuice, no Back to the Future.
Yeah, both of those would have issues in today's in today's world, for sure, for sure.
Sometimes, though, films get it wrong. And when they do, there are consequences. Expensive ones.
So, for instance, in 2009, MGM wanted to remake Red Dawn.
This is the emergency broadcast system. We are under attack by conventional forces of the Russian army.
The original film, released in the 80s, is about a group of American teenagers who try to fend off a Soviet invasion of their American hometown.
Communications have broken down other parts of the country. Large areas of the Midwest may have been overrun.
And in 2009, MGM wanted to remake the movie, and they decided that they were going to remake it with China as the invading force. They filmed the movie, they put like a Hemsworth brother in it, and they were ready to go. And they filmed this entire movie with China as the invader of the U.S. And whenever they were in edits and Chinese officials learned of this production, they realized that it was going to become a major political issue. And so they did something pretty extraordinary.
When the movie came out, North Korea was the villain. The studio paid for every reference to China, the flags, the badges on a uniform, to be cut out of the film.
It cost them $1 million, but whenever they're done, the entire plot has been changed from a Chinese invasion of the U.S. into a North Korean one, and that is how the movie is released.
North Korea? It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, there is a bigger picture here. They had to have had help.
And that production of Red Dawn was the last movie made by a major studio with China as the villain.
And why does Hollywood make these compromises for China?
Because, frankly, it's an economic no-brainer. And if you want to maintain access to the Chinese box office, you have to make these concessions.
All of this is because, for big movie studios, the stakes are often higher than just one blockbuster.
It has become about more than just maintaining access to the box office, because all of the major studios are owned by larger conglomerates or parent companies that have even broader interests in China. It's not just that the studio has to worry about, you know, Jurassic World not getting into Chinese theaters. It also has to worry about the new theme park it just built outside Beijing, to say nothing of the holdings that its larger Comcast parent company have in the country. So many Western businesses now that in the past 20 years have rushed into the Chinese market, not only because of its growth, but also just because of the sheer amount of revenue to be had there, and now find themselves in these really thorny political situations.
After the break, Top Gun Maverick runs into some rough patches with China.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/journal. Terms and conditions apply.
For Paramount, getting the Top Gun sequel off the ground hasn't been easy.
I've been told that this sequel, I mean, it's been in development for many, many years, I think more than a decade or so, as they tried to get the story just right. And of course, I think a lot of times whenever these properties are dusted off and brought back, one thing that studios have understood is that you really need that connection to the original. A Top Gun sequel without Tom Cruise was just not going to work. And so it wasn't until Tom Cruise agreed to this story that they were able to get the green light.
And in creating a sequel that was going to live up to that big, patriotic 1980s energy, a new Top Gun was always going to be an expensive movie full of fighter jet sequences and some big star power. And one of the ways Paramount was going to make this movie work financially was with new investors, including Tencent, a Chinese tech giant that was also making investments in Hollywood.
I happened to be in Shanghai in the summer of 2019, and I attended this presentation that Tencent gave outlining their upcoming film investments. And they announced that they were investing in several Hollywood movies. They were going to invest in Top Gun. To see a Chinese firm affiliated with such a pro-American movie, even then, I remember, stood out to me.
But from the beginning, Tencent asked Paramount to do something, and it was something pretty specific: to switch out those two flag patches on the back of Tom Cruise's bomber jacket.
It's my understanding that it was Tencent officials who suggested that those two flags, the Japanese and Taiwanese flags, be removed from an early trailer of the film. And again, I think it's worth pointing out that this was not a request that came on a memo from the Ministry of Propaganda. This was just something that Chinese executives and then Hollywood executives did preemptively, kind of in anticipation of there being an issue. The only problem was that decision would very quickly backfire because it didn't take long for people to notice. And pretty soon, Top Gun, of all movies, Top Gun became this example of Hollywood acquiescence to the Chinese Communist Party.
And now the movie is out, but Tencent isn't involved. What happened there?
Tencent decided that affiliation with such a pro-American movie could be a problem with officials in Beijing, and they very quietly dropped their investment in the film. And they backed out.
Paramount is still waiting to hear if it will be able to release the new Top Gun in China. But judging from its early returns in the U.S., it may not have to heavily rely on the international box office.
It collected about $160 million over Memorial Day, which is a record for the holiday. And actually, most critically, the response from audiences has been incredibly enthusiastic.
And then what happened with the jacket?
So I'm sitting there, I'm watching the movie. I don't want to go to the bathroom. I don't want to look at my phone. I don't want to blink because I want to see if the flags have been restored. And there is a scene early in the film where Tom Cruise is putting on his iconic bomber jacket. And for the briefest of seconds, you can see the patch and the original flags have been restored. And you can see the Japanese flag and the Taiwanese flag. Again, it is for a split second. There are no shots from the back while he's wearing it, but the original flags are there.
What does this whole story about the flags on the back of Tom Cruise's bomber jacket say about China's influence over Hollywood?
Well, I think you can trace the arc of China's influence in Hollywood by looking at the two Top Guns. And how did we go from a moment when a 1980s blockbuster is this celebration of the American military to a world 35 years later where a sequel to that story has to worry about what officials in Beijing think of every single frame, every single line of dialogue? I mean, it's really unprecedented in Hollywood history to see this kind of foreign influence. And in the 20th century, Hollywood was this incredible asset in selling America to the world. And where we are today, Hollywood is beholden to another foreign government, one that is increasingly at ideological odds with their home country.
That's all for today, Wednesday, June 1st. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. If you like our show, follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We're out every weekday afternoon. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.